Hi, welcome to the first Macromedia Developer Relations podcast. My name is Christian Cantrell, and I work for Developer Relations at Macromedia. I've been with the company for about 2.5 years. My background is in client-server development, primarily in Java, ColdFusion, and JavaScript.
And my name is Mike Chambers. I'm also on the Developer Relations team here at Macromedia. I've worked here about 4.5 years and focusing most of that time on Flash development, Flash platform. So why are we doing this? Well, we're always trying to find new ways to communicate with their customers, ways that we can communicate better. So we have, we've had our weblogs for about 3 years, and those have been incredibly successful. They're a great tool for us. We've always been active on the discussion boards and mailing lists. And we've been looking at podcasting for about 6 months now. It's been really popular. It's really taken off. And we've been trying to figure out ways that we can leverage it if this is something that would actually be useful for us and for our customers. And so we really this is kind of an experiment we're playing around with. We're not sure how successful it's going to be. It may not be that useful, but we're going to try it out and see if maybe we can get some more information out, some more context around some of the stuff we're working on, some of the reason of the decisions we make. And, we're here in San Francisco at the Macromedia headquarters, so maybe every now and then we can bring some people down and talk to the people who make the real decisions, because it's certainly not Christian and I. And maybe we can talk to them and find out some more information.
Today's podcast is being released under a pretty open license. It's a Creative Commons license. Its full name is the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. If you want to know what that means, you can check out the link to the license, which we're going to provide for today's podcast notes. All notes and all URLs that we discuss today are going to be on the podcast website, and you can find that at weblogs.macromedia.com/podcast.
So on today's show, we're going to talk about the new MXNA Flashlight data services that we launched this week. We're also, Mark Anders is going to join us. He's a vice president of engineering for Macromedia, working on a new project codenamed Zorn. He's going to talk to us about that. Christian's going to talk about some deep linking and the implications around RIA development, a bunch of stuff we've been working on this week. And then we're also going to just give a quick overview of the Flash JavaScript integration kit.
We've been adding a lot of new weblogs to the Macromedia XML News Aggregator. We're up to 476 right now. We're aggregating feeds in 16 different languages, and nearly 80 of those are Macromedia feeds.
So one of the new feeds that we added this week was actually a new Macromedia weblog from Mark Anders, and Mark's here with us today. So welcome, Mark.
Thanks.
So Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at Macromedia?
Well, my name is Mark Anders, and I am Vice President of Engineering, and I run, along with Sho Kuamoto, a project codenamed Zorn, which is a new tool that we're building for developing rich internet applications that use the Flex framework. And let's see, I've been at Macromedia for about 8 or 9 months, and before that I worked at Microsoft for about 10 years, and I worked on a variety of projects, but two of the ones people might know the most are I started, along with Scott Guthrie, the ASP.NET team, and I was the head of the ASP.NET team and the .NET framework teams for their 1.0 and 1.1 version. So I worked on .NET really from the beginning. Oh. And the reason I came to Macromedia was I thought there were really amazing things being done with Flash, and especially around building applications, but that I thought the tools and the programming model could be really made much more accessible to experienced developers.
Right. So how much did you know about Flash before you came to Macromedia?
Well, I knew that I really couldn't use it. I knew that, I was one of those guys who would pick it up every once in a while and look at it. You know, it's kind of one of those things. There are a lot of products like that, like I was always an Emacs user, and I would sometimes, even though I learned VI first when I was in college,
the rules.
You'd see guys use VI, VI, and you'd say, wow, you know, how incredibly productive. I should pick that up. And then you pick it up and you can't make heads or tails of it. And Flash was always kind of the same thing. You know, I would see these amazing things on the web and say, wow, you know, I should really check that out. I've been interested in sort of how people write programs, you know, going back to really Windows 1.0, which is when I started programming for Windows. But, you know, in sort of terms of what the programming model is and what various tools are. And I would pick up Flash and give it a whirl, and my head would just spin and my eyes would glaze over as I, you know, had to deal with things like timelines and, you know, you had code on layers and everything. And after doing it for a couple of days, I would sort of get used to it, and I would sort of be able to map the concepts that I had in my head, which were more things like components and events and containment and hierarchy, with the concepts that Flash had. But it was always kind of a struggle.
So now you're working on some stuff that'll kind of, you know, provide make Flash available to like a whole new class of developers. So why don't you tell us about that a little?
Yeah, well, the first thing, you know, there are kind of a number of different aspects towards making Flash accessible towards developers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just started a blog. I've been wanting to do it for a while, but was never really sure how much, you know, I should say, mm-hmm. you know, when you're working on something that's not announced. But in my post, I had said, you know, make it more accessible for developers. And I got comments back from people saying, you know, Flash developers are developers.
Right.
And they are. You know, the developers I'm talking about are kind of who come more from a traditional GUI programming environment or a web programming environment. There are a couple of different aspects. One is the programming model. And there, you know, some of the key concepts in Flash are things like the timeline, layers, the stage, movie clips, and just the structure of those is very different from how people who come from a traditional GUI background think of it. However, before I came to Macromedia, people had already realized that, and they came up with a really great programming model in a product called Flex. And so, you know, when I was talking to Macromedia about coming over, that was one of the things I thought was very, very interesting, is what had been done with Flex. The second aspect is really around the tooling. And there are just a bunch of what I would call sort of the basics of a classical IDE that you want to have if you're producing a development tool for developers. And we went through actually a long evaluation for how we would build Zorn. And one of, I think, the most exciting things that has happened in IDEs, and this will be the topic of an upcoming blog post, mm-hmm. Is really around Eclipse. You know, if you think back to the original IDEs, they were really kind of tools, but they were also ways of integrating a lot of different processes and a lot of what were separate tools. So, you know, the first ones like Turbo Pascal or, you know, some of the other Borland products or Microsoft Visual Basic, you know, they combined the editor with the compiler with, you know, the make program to allow you to really have the concept of a project, really, you know, add things and, you know, push a button and get a result. Visual Studio over the last number of years has really, I think, become sort of the premier IDE that people would use. But over the last 2 or 3 years, Eclipse, which is really an open source framework, has, I think, really taken the lead in terms of what an IDE is. And it's really kind of fascinating because if you read sort of how Eclipse would describe themselves, it's really kind of a framework for building tools and for integrating right. tools. And that sounds like a very programmery thing. But if you think about what an IDE is, it's really a means for integrating lots of different tools and having them communicate. And what we realized when we were sort of evaluating how we wanted to build Zorn was that what's so exciting about Eclipse is that you do have this sort of way, this architecture of building tools, an architecture of integrating them. And because it's open source, you can have anybody who really wants to build something that plugs into Eclipse, build them. And, right. you know, we're seeing a tremendous amount in the open source community around Flash today, which is, you know, just fantastic. There, you know, there are compilers, there are statement completion engines, there are things like that. And by Macromedia becoming part of that community and building on top of that, we'll be able to work with those things and work with a lot of the other open source and proprietary tools that people build on Eclipse.
Right, right. So you mentioned, you know, you're talking about the open source aspect of Eclipse. And, you know, this is like you're familiar with FAME, which is this this really big movement and way of developing apps that the Flash community has begun to build around the Eclipse platform. So how does this relate to Zorin? How is Zorin, like, how are these going to work together? How are they going to coexist? Like, how do these Zorin and FAME, how do they relate to each other?
Well, at this point, we're not necessarily building on FAME. I mm-hmm. think we're probably building on the E part
right.
of FAME, the Eclipse portion. FAME is really, I think, at this point, a lot of discrete pieces that use Eclipse as a way of sort of integrating together. You know, so people take the, what is it, the MTASC compiler.
Right, right.
Those long acronyms, once you get over like three letters, they
well,
kind of threw me
up,
for.
Yeah, that's why they came up with FAME.
Right, exactly.
Acronym of acronyms.
Well, at least you can pronounce it and you remember it, even if you can't remember what it stands for. But you know, there's a compiler, there's the there's a, you know, code completion engine,
ADST.
Zorin is going to, I think, probably have some of the things that the open source community is providing today, and it will integrate with other pieces. Mm-hmm. You know, most importantly, it's going to integrate with Eclipse. And so other things that are not necessarily considered part of FAME today, you know, such as a CVS module that allows you to, you know, access version control,
right.
You know, are important pieces of that. And, you know, when people talk about FAME, they're not just talking about, you know, the compiler and the statement mm-hmm. completion. They're talking about the editor that Eclipse provides, as well as all of the other tools that people use. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, we'll probably have duplication with some mm-hmm. of the pieces and be complementary with some of the pieces.
Right, right. So do you see, like, FAME as a competitor to Zorin? Or?
No, I don't really think of it like that. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting things when you observe developers do what they do is, you know, I'll even see somebody using GNU Emacs, which is, you know, a fantastic editor. And they're editing their source code, and then suddenly you look and they're like in Notepad. And you're like, dude, what are you doing? I mean, you already have a text editor. And he's like, well, you know, I like to maintain different context. And this lets me know that I'm editing something else. And so it's hard to tell, you know, exactly what developers are going to like. But by all being on the Eclipse platform, you know, if people don't like, for example, our statement completion engine, maybe they can use another one. If
right.
we produce a better one, maybe they'll, you know, won't use that. Maybe they'll use other pieces. So I think really, you know, part of having a rich platform is having a rich set of tools. And I think that for people who are creating software and creating platforms, and creating sort of really rich sets of tools, one of the hardest things to realize is that you might create a complete set of pieces, but you might allow people to plug in different ways. And some of those ways might actually remove some of the pieces that you defined. So, you know, when I look at something like FAME, I don't really necessarily see a competitor. I mean, they're all – the people who are doing FAME love Flash. They're trying to create tools that work for them and workflows that work for them. And we're trying to do the same thing. And I think it's all very, very complementary and gives people choice.
Yeah, it's all in the end, it's all good for the Flash platform.
Absolutely.
So, well, thanks for coming down from the second floor down to the first floor to talk to us, Mark. And we'll look forward to reading your weblog.
One of our newest projects on the developer relations team has been the MXNA Flash services, which are some data services that we put together last week, that we launched last week, that basically make MXNA aggregated weblog data available to really any Flash application, but specifically Flashlight applications. So it's they're a set of, I don't know, maybe five or six sort of functions. They're all in their own CFM files that you can call and you can pass parameters into, and they return data in a URL encoded format, which can be used by the load variables function. You can use it in any Flash application, of course, load vars or load variables. But they're sort of meant for there are better ways to load data into Flash applications than using load variables and load vars. Typically, typically you're going to use Flash remoting or web services, and MXNA has its own set of web services that you can use for that. So these Flash services are really pretty much designed to be used with Flashlight. We launched them sometime last week or something like that, and we sort of put them together pretty quickly and put them out there. And I'm not a prolific Flashlight developer, so I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't really know exactly what people wanted, so I just sort of took a guess. And we put them out there with some documentation, and we started getting feedback really fast, which is great. And we found a lot of consistent requests. There were specific things that people wanted. So we did another release a few days later, and then one more release after that. And I think we pretty much got exactly what people wanted. People seem to be pretty happy with it, and we're starting to see some apps pop up.
Richard Leggett actually was one of the people on the Flashlight Yahoo list who through the last week or so was helping us, giving us a lot of feedback on the data services, and sent us a lot of bugs, and there were a couple bugs in there. Hopefully we have them all. And he put together a really cool app. This really blew us away. We were really surprised that someone put together this nice so quickly. And basically he put together an MXNA Flashlight app, and it allows you to scroll through the latest posts from MXNA. So if you want to see, what the latest news is from the Macromedia community or the Flash community, you can scroll through that. But then he also allows you added a search function. But I think the thing that I was most impressed with, and again, this is a Flashlight app running on a mobile phone, was that you have a very small screen, but the interface is so intuitive. He really thought about the UI. You can continually drill down into data to get more information as you need it, so it's really lightweight. So we're really impressed with this. I think we're going to need to have a contest or something to see if we can get some more apps like this built. I'll have to go look upstairs in the closet to see what we have for prizes.
Yeah, I've gotten some emails from some people working on some other projects. So Richard's was the first. I think there are going to be a lot more. The other thing I really like about his project is that he's releasing the source code for it too, which is very cool.
Right.
So thank you, Richard. If you're a Flashlight developer or you want to get into Flashlight, check out the URL on today's podcast notes. It'll be posted there, and you can go download the application and download the source code. Another project that we've been working on is something that Kevin Lynch actually started some time ago, and that is deep linking within rich internet applications. John Udell made a post a few weeks ago talking about, he had noticed some of the work that we've been doing with integrating Flash and JavaScript, and he had mentioned that one of the issues that still exists is this concept of deep linking, and that is that he wants to be able to put a URL on his weblog or somewhere that links directly into a specific state of an application. Whenever you see something in your browser that you want to capture or you want to send to someone, it's usually safe to highlight the URL in the location bar and IM it or email it to somebody. And they can usually, click on that link and open that up in their browser and find the state of that application that you captured, which is, it's a concept known as REST, a representational state transfer. So, how do you do that with, a rich internet application, something that's really dynamic, something that uses a lot of JavaScript or a Flash rich internet application, when there's not really a concept of multiple pages? And Kevin Lynch discovered a way of doing it. So we decided to sort of expand on that and to leverage those techniques and see what we could do. So there's the category click feed report in MXNA, which is a report that's sort of our sandbox or a playground for a lot of our new technologies. It uses the JavaScript and Flash integration kit to communicate from JavaScript into Flash and vice versa. And so what we decided to do was be able to allow people to capture, you know, the state of that page when it's, you know, when they've selected a specific report, and be able to send that URL to people so someone else can open that URL and see the exact you know, report that they were viewing. It used to be that the report, well, the report now defaults to a specific weblog. So if you want to be able to put a link on your weblog to the report for your weblog, you can now do that. I wrote pretty extensively about how this works on my weblog. That URL will be available in today's podcast notes. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about it and about the technique. It's not as easy as it seems. And unfortunately, it's getting easier because, you know, there are, you know, now there are some examples out there. There's some code. There are some tutorials that Kevin wrote. And then I wrote another one on my weblog, too. But we found that there were sort of two good ways of doing it. One way, which is the way that Kevin first experimented with, is to use named anchors. You can dynamically update the URL in your browser's location bar by appending or by changing anchor names, which is values that come after the hash in a URL. So you have, you know, you have a URL, and then you have a question, you know, you have query string parameters, and at the end of the query string parameters, you can optionally have anchor names, and the anchor names refer to specific places within your HTML page. So you can actually link to a specific part of the HTML page. Those anchor names can be manipulated dynamically with JavaScript, whereas query string parameters cannot be, which means that you can use the Flash JavaScript integration kit or other techniques to, now, within your Flash application or your, you know, Ajax JavaScript application to change that URL to capture the state of it. So what happens now in the category click report is when you'll notice when you click on different feeds, not only does the page refresh and not only does the Flash chart refresh, but the URL changes as well. And it just appends a couple of IDs there. And that allows you to, you know, to copy and paste that URL or whatever, do whatever you want to do with it, and that captures, you know, that particular snapshot of the application. There are some downsides to doing that, and that is that the, you know, it's sort of not what anchors are for. And what ends up happening is if you have, you know, one specific URL, let's say that links to my weblog, and then you go up to the location bar and you paste in a URL that links to Mike's weblog, or to the data from Mike's weblog, it won't actually refresh because the browser thinks that the only thing that's changed are the names of the portion of the page that you're trying to link to. So it actually doesn't refresh the page in that case. So Google realized that this was a problem, and they implemented a different technique. If you check out Google Maps, you'll see that they actually have this little, you know, link to this page or something like that, little link up in the upper right-hand corner. And they change that dynamically. So if you type in an address, you know, the page refreshes. You'll notice that, you know, and you'll see the map of, you know, for the area that you just typed in. The link hasn't changed. The link in the location bar hasn't changed because that page has been updated dynamically without actually reloading the entire page. And so what they do instead is they dynamically change the link in the upper right hand corner, the link to this page link. And you know, if you want to capture, you know, that particular map or that state of Google Maps, you do so by, you know, copying the link in the upper right-hand corner. So we did that as well. If you look below the Flash chart, you'll see I see a link that says link to this report, and that uses a different technique where it's actually dynamically updating that URL using JavaScript by manipulating the DOM. And it's actually using query string parameters in that case. So you can manipulate query string parameters for links in your page dynamically using JavaScript, but you can't change them in the location bar. Now, the advantage of this is of this approach is that you don't have the same limitations as you have with the anchor names. You know, the browser, it's a little more, you know, it's common. The browser considers a URL with different query string parameters to be a new URL, so it actually will refresh the page and stuff like that. So the disadvantage, though, is that it's a little less intuitive for your users because their users are accustomed to just copying the link in the location bar and sending it out, and they think that, you know, whatever's in the location bar will capture the state of their application. So as Internet applications get richer, as applications like Google Maps, applications like what we've built with the Macromedia XML News Aggregator, other rich Internet applications, Flash applications, Flex applications, that use this new concept of state become more popular and prolific, there are going to have to be new conventions for people linking to those pages. And I'm guessing what's going to happen is you're going to start seeing more and more links in the upper right-hand corner of a page that say, link to this page. And I think that people will get used to that, and that's going to end up being the way to go. You can check out the tutorial on my weblog. You can check out Kevin's. I'll include the link for Kevin's weblog post as well. All the code, I haven't actually posted any of the code yet, but I don't, you know, hide or obfuscate any code, you know, in MXNA or my weblog or anything, so you can just view source and go ahead and grab all that code. And eventually, one of these days, I'll get to get around to actually posting it on my weblog.
So one of the other things that we were working on this week was the updating the Flash JavaScript integration kit. This is something we actually released about 3 weeks ago as part of the Flash platform launch. We'd put it together at that time. We hadn't figured out the licensing at that time yet, so we didn't actually talk about it too much, but there was a link to it in the Flash platform paper, white paper by Kevin Lynch. But then about a week after that, we released it under an open source license, and we're really excited about it. It's hosted on OS Flash, and it's what the kit allows you to do. It makes it really simple to communicate between JavaScript and ActionScript and vice versa. So you can call ActionScript functions directly from JavaScript, and you can call JavaScript functions directly from ActionScript. And the thing, so that's cool. I mean, I think that's really neat. It's really simple to use, but the thing that I really like about it is that you can actually pass multiple data types across the wire when you're, you know, as parameters to your function calls. So the data types include objects, arrays, strings, numbers, dates, booleans, nulls, and undefined. And we handle all the serialization back and forth. Now, you're probably saying, you know, couldn't Flash and JavaScript communicate back and forth in the past? And they could. And actually, Flash to JavaScript communication, you could get pretty good results using this get URL, and you create this little JavaScript URL trick. It works pretty well. Like, I've never run into cases where it hasn't worked. I've heard reports that haven't, but it's pretty reliable. But the issue there is you can only, or like, at least we thought, you could only pass strings. Communicating from JavaScript to ActionScript is actually very difficult. We have APIs to do it, but to get it to work consistently cross-browser is difficult. In some cases, it's impossible, and we actually tried to use some of these APIs, and we would run into issues where it just simply wouldn't work in some newer browsers, or wouldn't work. It'd work in a slightly different way. So we used some different techniques and encapsulated these within this library to make it really simple to use. So this week, again, we released it. It's hosted on osflash.org. It's a great site, hosts a lot of open source Flash projects, and it also provides a really good infrastructure for us. So we are the repository for it. The source is on Open Flash, so we just check it in there so people can see it. We've had people reporting bugs to us, and we fixed a couple of them. In particular, there are a couple of pretty big bugs that got through the first release. And of course, it was a beta, so that gives us a little bit of excuse. But we had actually compiled the main gateway Swift, so serialization wouldn't work at all between JavaScript and Flash. So that's working now. And we found this bug where it was really interesting, but if you compiled the project in anything aside from Ellipsis or the latest version of Flash, that's Flash 7.2, any version of Flash authoring besides 7.2, it wouldn't compile. And this is because the local connection object, which it uses, was not dynamic in the initial releases of Flash MX 2004, and so it had problems with that. So we fixed that. Those are actually the biggest problems, and we fixed a couple other small bugs. So it's a lot more solid now. We haven't done a new release yet. We'll probably do one next week that include all these bug fixes. But we've been spending a lot of time on the wiki and updating the docs. We really love the wiki. It's so easy to update everything. So we've been adding tutorials and some docs. Danny Patterson from CommuniMX wrote an amazing article, tutorial on getting started with the kit. So you definitely should check that out. But this is something we're really excited about. We're starting to see examples come out of people using it, people finding out some some new ideas they're getting because it's so easy to use. So if you get a chance, make sure to check that out. It's something we're having a lot of fun playing with. We use it on MXNA on the category feed click report, so you can view some source for that, either view source in the browser or just right-click on the charting application and view source, and you can see how everything's working behind the scenes there.
Okay, so that's a wrap for today. Please let us know what you think. Let us know if this podcast is worth our time and worth your time. You can find notes and links for today's podcast at weblogs.macromedia.com/podcast. And you can use the comments to leave us feedback about this podcast. Thanks for listening.